Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, September 18th, 2010. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic this week is striking the Glass-Steagall death blow to Inter Alpha, making way for Nawapa and Moon Mars. Now, I think you know what death blow means, and we all know what Glass-Steagall means, although we will be talking about this. But we're very glad to have here live in the studio with me John Hoeffel, who's just written a paper on the Inter Alpha financial vulture networks. Welcome, John.
Hi, Marcia.
And this is out in the September 17th issue of Executive Intelligence Review. It's on EIR Online. And the title, I think, of John's article is Inter Alpha Nation Killers for Imperial Genocide. Is that right, John?
Yeah, that pretty well sums up what
a little understated. But what I'm very glad to have, the two other guests I'm very glad to have can be with us, are located out in Seattle in the LaRouche Political Action Committee office there. And they are Louis Wilden and Francesca Naimi. Francesca, welcome. Are you, you're both there?
Yeah, we're here.
Great.
We're here.
Welcome, Louis. And these two organizers who've been on with us from the Pacific Coast before, different times in recent years, are, of course, geographically situated very strategically in the middle of the actual geographic area of the North American Water and Power Alliance. And also recently they were leading an organizing foray into the state of Idaho, which they will be talking about, but is in terms of the engineering involved, critical. And we'll hear a lot about that. What I want to identify just at the beginning is the fact that Mr. LaRouche has upcoming in less than a week an international webcast on the new economy. You could say that, but it's going to be a strategic bombshell, I'm sure. And it's Friday. That will be September 24. It's 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, and you find that on his Political Action Committee. We have a press release, I think, on the LaRouchePub.com, but on LaRouchePack.com, tune in 1 p.m. Eastern time for that dynamite webcast. I say that especially because I think I conflated Friday and Saturday on last week's show. We will have a show the day after LaRouche's webcast on September 25 at our usual time from 3 to 4 Eastern. And really, we're speaking today in the midst of accelerating, continued, desperate physical breakdown and political tumult at a pace, at an epic pace. And we've had some major, there are so many major events, I wouldn't try and summarize them because the tempo of things is just, there's too many and too fast. But of course, one major process is the fact that Rachel Brown, in Boston, has faced off for months against one of the flunkies for the Inter Alpha, for the world imperial system, Barney Frank. And that election did take place this past Tuesday on the 14th. This was the last primary elections in the United States, needless to say, New York State and others. And it is the fact that there were over 10,000 votes registered. There may have been many more. That's another problem. But the issue isn't the statistics. Statistically, she had over 20% of the vote as far as what's being said to be official. But the thing is, she is acting as a world figure against these whole imperial vulture networks. As she said, Barney's career is now coming to end and hers is just beginning. And her fellow candidates of the three major candidacies nationally for Congress, Keisha Rogers in Texas, Summer Shields, are carrying the banner for that breakout from this collapse I'm talking about here, for the necessity of reinstating Glass-Steagall here and the principle internationally, going with the North American Water and Power Alliance, in all its implications. And I'll just identify, I recommend everyone check out the LaRouche Political Action Committee website, and you'll see Keisha Rogers, who was with friends here in Washington, D.C. all week for the Hispanic and the Black Caucus of the Congress meetings, because Congress has just come back for a week after its August and Labor Day recess, and the world has shifted. The world's completely shifted. And today, another part of that shift, out in San Francisco on the Pacific Rim, Summer Shields, who's running against Nancy Pelosi, but he's hosting a Four Powers Alliance conference. Mrs. LaRouche, Helga Zepp LaRouche, I think, is addressing that by video. And there are other major things like that taking place. So this is, I just wanted to start with this kind of indicative picture of how fast things are going. And in the last 12 hours, there was something wonderful posted on the LaRouche Political Action website, which is a follow-on, an extension of North American Water and Power Alliance. There's a view of what ought to be going on in Africa. What's been proposed there for decades, it's similar to the 1964 North American Water and Power Alliance. The water improvement projects for the Congo Basin to divert water northward into Lake Chad, finish what's never been finished about the Great Nile River, the longest in the world. This is a it sounds like I'm giving the pitch here for what everyone ought to see, but that is the kind of stage in which we're the platform in which we're operating now. This is a shift period. Now, with that in mind, I want to start before the organizing reports that we're going to have on the northwest of the United States. I want to turn to you, John, because you've issued a kind of Know Your Enemy dossier here with this new article on the Inter-Alpha Banking Networks. And I know in the last 10 days, Mr. LaRouche referred to that, said, get it out before that Barney Frank, before Rachel Brown was wiping up Barney Frank. So if you would say who the introduction to who these networks are and why Glass-Steagall is absolutely like garlic to a, what's that, to a...
a vampire.
Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, you know, vampires in the Inter-Alpha Group have a lot in common. The Inter-Alpha Group is a capability. You know, don't think of it in terms of these individual banks as being the powers, but think about this banking group as being a capability by which the empire has launched this financial warfare operation against the United States in particular and against all nation states in general for the purpose of destroying the concept of the nation state and replacing it with this corporatist concept of that we know as globalization. And that's been the key to this. And the reason why they want to do this is because they want to dramatically cut the world's population. They want to go back to a... They hate progress because as people get, as people progress, as they get smarter and learn more, become better educated, better fed, you know, these kinds of things, as standards of living rise, they're less and less susceptible to put up with this medieval nonsense of these oligarchs. So they created the Inter-Alpha Group as a battering ram to destroy nation states. And it's been in one sense a very effective thing, and in another sense, it's been a monumental miscalculation because they're blowing everything up. And now, you know, ironically, the only thing that's going to save these oligarchs is what we're pushing, what the NWAPA program and all that means represents. So it's a real irony.
Right, and we want to get into the content and more of that, like you're saying. What's the need to know history? So turning to Francesca and Lewis, then. You've, of course, been organizing for the Glass-Steagall reinstatement and principles for a couple of years. But on launching the fact that we have to have the North American Water and Power Alliance underway, why don't one of you start about, in particular, what you've been doing from Seattle and the Northwest?
Sure. Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Idaho trip. Because the NWAPA, when you look at it, that's That's the potential. That's what we could do if we defeat this inner alpha group, if we go with this Glass-Steagall and clean up the whole entirety of the system. And so it's important to get out into the population of Idaho to really, really give them a sense of a vision of the future, if you would, to enable them, you know, to guide their actions in the present and what they do. And so, yeah, we targeted Idaho because of its particular role in the NWAPA project, of which you have, that's your transfer system. And if you go on to LaRouche Pack, you'll see on our guided tour what it is that we actually have to do to accomplish to get the, you know, the water coming out of Alaska up over the Sawtooth Mountains, through and over the Sawtooth Mountains, to then be distributed into the southern part of the United States. And that would require 25 gigawatts of electricity. That's 7.5 times more power than Idaho already uses. You're talking about major, major investment in nuclear power and this kind of stuff. And you have tunnels that are going to be 50 miles long, 100 feet wide, et cetera. And what it does is it puts Idaho in the center of the reindustrialization of the United States. So we thought it was pretty important to get out there and talk to institutional layers and also the population about this particular project. So we did an entire week, you know, starting off in the state capitol in Boise. And after a call with a very successful crew that went around the state in Nevada, wonderful fundraising trip for Summer for Congress, et cetera, we really, really just bared down and said, we're going to take this state over and do everything that we possibly can, you know, just be totally militant about it. So after the day in Boise, the trip became incredibly fun. And I'd mention another thing, that in Idaho you have one of the centers of nuclear research, the Nuclear National Laboratory there in Idaho. So we went around in that area of Idaho Falls, ARCO, and where the lab is to see if we can talk to some different nuclear scientists. So, yeah, we toured the southern part of the state, organizing everywhere. And what was really fun is giving people a sense of Rachel's victory over Barney. The people in Idaho, they, you know, love the idea that Barney Frank is going to be defeated, in a sense. And, you know, I was telling people, you know, Rachel wiped the floor with Barney Frank, and I feel sorry for the floor. But, so, yeah, it was a really, really good sense. One of the things we did in terms of institutions is we talked to an old professor who's been a part of our networks at the Pocatello, Idaho State campus. And it's funny, you go out to ARCO, you see a monument where it's the very first test breeder reactor of nuclear power that was ever put in the United States. And ARCO itself, the small town, is the very first city in the United States that was ever powered by nuclear power. And so there's a little monument there, and there's something written on the monument. You know, the old professor that we talked to is the one who actually wrote the little historical thing on the monument. And he was, you know, incredibly excited. He's the head of two different departments.
Yeah, when we first met with him, he immediately brought his colleagues in, or invited his colleague that was actually in the faculty area, and invited him to come watch this tour with us, because even though he said he had already seen it, he wanted to look at it again with us. So we looked at it with his engineering fellow engineering professor. He's the head of the Department of Engineering there, and he had been talking with us for the last couple of weeks before we got there. But at first, there was this just kind of overwhelming sense that they had of how large this project and how big this idea is and how we're going to defeat the environmentalists and, you know, all these other things that come up. But then after we actually got into, you know, the question of the fact that we have to in order to solve the real economic problems that we're facing, and, you know, talking about what we've actually been able to do politically on this, you know, nationally and internationally, they started getting really super excited about, well, he, you know, one thing he brought up is that, you know, Kennedy Kennedy actually, when he first announced the Apollo program, everybody thought he was crazy. But we did it in 9 years, and they got totally optimistic after we actually had a real discussion about what is really possible because of what we are doing. And then they started coming up with all these ideas of, you know, what can I do? Well, I suppose I can show this to my students. I can, you know, I can refer you to this professor. And have you talked to this guy? And it was just super productive after that.
Well, that's great. And maybe, Louis, you might want to continue on your tour. Or, Francesca, you've also been talking to people long distance, too, besides being right there in the same room with them, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to say more about that now in the sense of response to people who are engineers or corporate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've actually been doing a lot of outreach calls into engineering firms as well as departments in universities around Idaho and Washington and Oregon. And generally, it's been very open. A lot of people recently have heard about NWAPA because there's the buzz that we've been creating, and you know people are talking about it. They're you know forwarding the emails of the map to each other, and they're really excited about actually being able to revive this project because a lot of them knew about it from back when they used to study. When they were in school, you know, this was, you know, something they actually were going to do. And, you know, at first, some of the professors, just to give you some of the stuff we encountered, would be a little bit, I don't know how to put it, more with this attitude of, you're going to do this. I've been in the nuclear business or I've been, you know, I've done this my whole life, 40 years, and we should have done this in the 60s. And you think you're coming in here and you're telling me that you're going to do this and have this shovel ready by October? Who do you think you are? Kind of attitude. But then after you just, you know, talk with them and, you know, you give them a sense of the reality that we're facing and the real revolutionary spirit that is actually being awakened right now by LaRouche's leadership and the fact that he's the only person laying out an alternative to economic hell. And what is the response that we're getting is just, you know, it's completely possible. And it becomes very clear to them that we're actually serious about fighting for this and that they have to fight too. And so, you know, every person that we've spoken to and on the NWAPA project, you know, particular engineers and people with the expertise have been totally willing, you know, all of them, you know, here's my card, here's my information, get back to me, I'll look at the stuff, I'll forward it to all my colleagues, you know, you should call this person. So it's been very productive, very good.
Oh, that's great. And we might get back to that more. It opens to lots of specific questions. But Louis, do you, on the tour you were describing, you also were on the ground on campuses in addition to the faculty? In other words, with students, how did that go?
Oh, the response is absolutely explosive. Obama is a hated figure in this country. You know, even if people come up and say that they, you know, are offended by the mustache or they support him, whatever, he's finished. He's done. And if it were up to the people of Idaho, he'd be gone tomorrow. And that's how I would describe the response. I mean, when we went back later in the week on the Friday at Boise State University, you just had swarms and swarms of young people, the kind of thing where, you know, you have 10 people around a table and you're trying to talk to people, you know, talk to 3 people at a time because they're a particular group of friends and, you know, you have people waiting in line, this kind of stuff. And so... Yeah, that's how I describe it. The other thing that we did is we set up in different towns on our way out to the eastern side of the state, and with the idea of doing an all-day deployment and then doing meetings in the evening with the people that we had met. The first one we did was the Twin Falls area in Idaho, and we had five people that came right from our organizing come and get in a sit-down discussion with us about LaRouche, about his solution to the crisis, and what we got to do to mobilize everybody. In Idaho Falls, we had eight people come into that meeting, and we also did a very long, lengthy deployment in Blackfoot, Idaho, over at the Idaho State Fair, and it turned into a 13-hour deployment. It was really fun, but redeploying there at the entrance of the fair, and what was unique about it is that there was just a large cross-section of people from all over eastern Idaho. And the conception, you know, that was given to us from the Nevada crew was this idea of completely taking over a town or a region that you're in, but doing it self-consciously. We call it the buzz principle.
Okay.
In which you go in and right when you set up, you just start calling radio stations. And we did that in Twin Falls. We called a bunch of radio stations and had at least two announce in the air that there was a group wanting to impeach Obama in front of a local post office. and then in the meantime, telling people to tell all of their friends, everybody that they know, that we're here, that we're fighting, that we want the support of them. And in Twin Falls, there's a funny story that as we were packing up, a guy pulled up in his truck and got out of the phone. He was on his cell phone. He said, no, they're still here. I'm standing right in front of them. So you had, and it took a while in Twin Falls. It's a bigger town. But you had this kind of thing where you got a sense that you're basically coming in and taking over an entire area with the idea of the impeachment of Obama. And so, it was a very extremely explosive response.
That's great. Well, let me ask a couple more things. John may, too. But it's just the kind of thing that InterAlpha is freaking out about, right, John? But do you also run into, in your part of the world, you have in eastern Washington, the Great Grand Coulee Dam. I mean, you mentioned the early, the first ever breeder reactor. Do you run in on the streets? Did any of the the public memory people show up, or do you have any sense of that?
I have a certain sense of, maybe Francesco wants to say something.
Okay.
Too. Because, you look at the title of the Basin paper, NAWAPA, from the standpoint of biospheric development.
Uh-huh.
And at first it might seem like a daunting task to be able to give that idea to somebody in a certain sense. But up here, especially when you're in the East and when you're in these areas, you just mentioned the Grand Coulee Dam.
Okay.
And so you want to know about, biospheric development itself, look at the Grand Coulee Dam. And the enormous output in agriculture and the total reordering of the land area in that region and the productivity and everything else that had occurred. And, of course, we have one sign out here that says NAWAPA, 10 times the size of Grand Coulee.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not 10 times. I mean 10,000 times the
okay,
size of Grand
right.
Coulee. Yeah.
Still, it probably had the same reaction.
Yeah, exactly. And so people are able, if they're connected, there's a lot of farming out here. We were just in a small town yesterday called Sela outside of Yakima with another one of these explosive responses. There's mm-hmm. a lot of farming around here. And so when people get a sense of Grand Coulee infrastructure, what it is that they're living in their life right now, why it is that they have what they have, they tend to get it. That's mankind's role. And so that's what I'd say about Francesco, something else.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's definitely the case, especially in the smaller towns that we've been doing this idea of creating a buzz principle. A lot of times you're not really conscious of it, but you don't have to really do much except, go out there with the truth and
the mustache.
Yeah, and the solution, and people are just totally inspired. They're calling all their friends from their cars as they see us. Their friends are calling them and telling them that they have to come and stop. And we just have to, provide the leadership right now, because these people are completely ready. That's all I would say.
Right. Well, I'll put the pitch in here, too. I hope everyone is, I mean, people know that resources, financial to back what you're doing. You can't obviously do it 48 hours in one day. But I think this is what you say, this process in different forms we're getting is what characterizes the whole condition of the United States. Right now, we can talk about the rest of the world another time. And I presume, too, you haven't had time, Francesca and others, you're right there in British Columbia, you have Alaska. Seattle's often a back-and-forth place for there, too. Do you have any feedback from there yourselves or not? I don't know that you have time to. Go ahead.
No, we haven't gone up. Okay. I mean,
on the phone or any other connections.
Oh,
no.
I know that there have been calls made into firms and other organizations up there. I haven't done any of that work.
Right, I know, and we'll be hearing about that. I know people in the Yukon who are very jumping up and down, up in Whitehorse, and let alone Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau,
what's interesting about the engineers that we talked to, a lot of them have worked in Alaska and know people that work in Alaska and some of these big firms and these other, major engineering companies, and they, are referring us to these people. So there's definitely work being done in Alaska.
Yeah, just what you're doing, the net you've thrown out. I just have to say this because John here, he can have a laugh. He follows a lot of the bad guys and the evil. But some of these, major firms, otherwise look, the projects they're supposed to be paid to design, for example, are such things as just moving natural gas from Alaska to the lower 48. There's two principal proposals. One of them is Warren Buffett's, and the other is a BP consortium. So,
which are basically the same thing.
Right. So they can sit around and look at that, or they get a phone call from you instead, and suddenly the real world enters. That's great. Well, let's keep going back and forth on this. But now, John, why don't you go into a little on the history? Start wherever you want to. But in 1971, when you did have a floating exchange rate, seems to me that was a whole new debate. It marked a point of a new domain of opportunity for the evil ones to do bad. And is that right in your article?
Yeah. I mean, the Glass-Steagall principle is essentially, it's an assertion of national sovereignty over a nation's financial system and economy. And so you have the empire, which is committed, this Anglo-Venetian method is based upon control of money. You know, Meyer Amschel Rothschild famously observed that he cares not who makes a nation's laws as long as he can control its money. Now, he's just a creature of this Venetian system, and that's the basis in which they operate. They control the money. You know, you can see this with the bailout and all of the things that are going on where the Fed is just pumping money like crazy. You know, all of this is all going into saving this Anglo-Venetian system. So how do you defeat it? Well, you defeat it with an assertion of national sovereignty. Glass-Steagall to start. I mean, the two components, the fixed exchange rate, which prevents monetary speculation of the sort that the Inner Alpha Group was created to exploit, and Glass-Steagall, the two sort of bookends of this crisis. And so in 1971, Nixon took the dollar off of gold in a British manipulation. The Inner Alpha Group was formed that year to take advantage of that. This is an operation which had actually begun at the very end of World War II for the empire to retake, and they had this whole concept of building up this globalized financial system and globalization as we know it today, and use that to become so much more powerful than any nation that no nation could buck them. And so you destroy all the nations. So, you know, this is a fascist concept. It was started by the private banks of the very old families of this system. And it grew, and it's, you know, like I said before, it's been a success in its own sort of crazy way. It's been a success. But they're extremely vulnerable because they've gone completely bankrupt. So you had 1971, the taking the dollar off of gold, which broke up the fixed exchange rate system. In 1999, you had the final nail in the coffin of Glass-Steagall. which then allowed the emergence of these mega banks, which are basically taking in depositors' money and doing all sorts of speculation with them. And everything that we've seen that's happened, all of the CDOs, the mortgage-backed securities, all this stuff that is all blown up would not really have been possible had we had actual regulation of the financial system. So this is all the children of InterAlpha, because they were formed to create this. So in a sense, modern Wall Street is a creature of the InterAlpha group.
Mm-hmm.
And, the banking system, all of the speculation, the global casino, this is the result of this InterAlpha group operation. So, and you can see in the United States, and you can see elsewhere, that the continuing demands for fascist austerity on the people in order to subdue the people, it's going along with this British depopulation plan. You want to start killing off people, shrinking the world. Everything Obama has done is doing this. And the way you defeat it is to go back to the two things that were necessary, that had to be defeated for them to be allowed to do this. You go back to, first you have Glass-Steagall. No more investment bank and commercial bank mixing. And in that, then you write off all the speculative nonsense, all the derivatives and things like that. You go back to a fixed exchange rate system. You break the back of the InterAlpha group. You break the back of this brutish empire and their control over money. And then you ally with, you have the four powers agreement, the United States, Russia, China, India, which together form a bloc powerful enough to make sure that the empire is defeated. So that's how you bust them up financially. You break them, and you have to destroy them. You have to absolutely break them. Now, we're calling for even more in terms of what you do with the InterAlpha group, seizing every operation they have in the United States, seizing all of their records, because this will be very nice grist for a PCORA commission to go through. There are a lot of people that need to go to jail. And I think we should help them in this. We should give them what they so richly deserve. And so, you do this, and then this creates the conditions whereby then you can begin to build your way out of it, which is where the whole NWAPA program and everything that flows from that comes in. So, the two things are really a 1-2 punch. First, you bankrupt these fascist bankers, and then you build the world out from under them.
Okay, well, let me ask Francesca and Lewis. You were describing you have the longtime, the engineers, the veteran engineers, let me put it that way, in the country who, if they haven't lived under a rock, which I don't think they they have some sense of what's going on. What is their reaction on the necessity of Glass-Steagall and that side of things?
Well, a lot of times the question comes up after you discuss, these great ideas. Well, how are you going to pay for this? And
okay.
So you immediately remind them, well, we have the bailout money to take back. We can divert those funds immediately to getting this project going this fall. And, well, you go through the Glass-Steagall principle, the fact that this is the way that we're going to actually do the bankruptcy reorganization. This is the way we're going to clean out the banks and free up the real money, the credit, towards infrastructure building, which makes it very clear for them, It's kind of like, oh, obviously, to them, after you go through the NWAPA, it's like, okay, well, we're going to figure out constitutionally how to do this. Of course there's a way to do it. And, yeah, that's... And they get very excited, especially when you, what we were telling people about Rachel's victory and her fight in Boston, and also the impeachment, and the fact that we're driving this thing, they get very excited and optimistic about that. So it's one thing.
Right, that makes sense. Now, let me ask you something else. Lewis and I were talking about it before the show, but you're also in an especially, kind of day-glow green part of the world. And do what? There must be some interesting dynamics that you create when you come storming in with these big, real ideas. What's that like, Lewis?
Well, there is only one environmentalist policy, and that is NWAPA. You know, we have to make the planet happy, help her to develop. And it's just obvious, you know. But in the meantime, you get the conservationists. And I actually had a question for John about this type of thing. But just to give you a sense of Seattle, I don't know, it's just something funny. Not that local politics means anything, but we got a mayor up here who his first act of policy is to try to cancel and destroy a long-planned infrastructure project, which is taking the Alaska Viaduct roadway and creating a tunnel underneath of the ground and putting that very dangerous highway underneath. He wants to totally destroy it. His second act of policy is to try to make sure that the bars can stay open all night long. So,
a recovery program.
Yeah, a recovery program, in other words.
Starbucks, you know, in the morning after you spent all night in a bar? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So you get a kind of a greeny, you know, type of response. And this is one of the major hubs and center of it, and, you know, which is Seattle. But what I'm noticing and deploying in the area and the city is a certain kind of bitterness towards Obama, that's for sure. A real, real profound dissatisfaction. And I find that to be very, very interesting. But we got to just be very, very sharp with the people up here, and we are. We printed up a Obama with a Hitler mustache sign that's about 6 feet tall, and make sure that we bring it, you know, everywhere that we go within the city, et cetera. But really, really being polemical and sharp on the question of NWAPA being a real environmentalist policy, because the opposite. And the opposite policy of assuming that the world is populated, I mean overpopulated rather, and shutting down different forms of technology, like even movements that I'm not entirely certain about, but there's movements to even destroy Grand Coulee and the dam system out into the Columbia River Basin. You know, that ultimately leads to genocide. And I wanted to ask John, in terms of Inner Alpha and these kinds of brainwashing operations with environmentalism, you know, what exactly is it, you know, why environment, not necessarily why environmentalism was created, but where is this thing going from their standpoint, and also in the environmental question?
Well, everything that the environmentalists say, and when I say the environmentalists, I'm talking about things like specifically Prince Philip and the World Wildlife Fund. And the key institutions, Greenpeace and other things, that are funded by this Anglo-Venetian system, they are pushing a smaller world. They want to deindustrialize the world because they understand that industrial progress is the engine that provides, that allows you to increase your population and raise your standard of living at the same time and make scientific breakthroughs. And, you know, that's the real path to progress. And so they're very explicitly targeting this. Now, you can't come out and say, well, we have a policy. We just want to kill everybody. Because, you know, that's not good marketing. So they sell it, you know, we're injuring Mother Earth. We have climate change and all of this kind of stuff. But the policy is genocide. This is the policy. This is what the Inner Alpha Group pushes. This is what the World Wildlife Fund pushes. This is what all of these things that you're talking about are designed to do, is to reduce the carrying capacity of the planet to the point where people will die off. And this is what this oligarchy wants, because that way they think they can control the planet again. They can go back to the way it was, you know, in the Middle Ages when things went their way. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's time we left the Middle Ages. And if they want to hang around, we'll put them in a zoo somewhere. But, you know, we've got a planet to build.
Theme park, Middle Ages.
Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah, Gark World or something. Oligarch World. And then, you know, we can move on.
One thing that I'll just bring up about the environmentalism question is, especially in the universities, you'll have this mixed bag where a lot of people will say some of the things that they say about, well, we can solve the resource problem or the water crisis. There's always like a faction that will say these things that are like, we got to save the salmon or something that's totally just crazy, like we need to, reduce the population. But then when you actually, we are splitting the environmentalists, because what we're finding with these professors and things like this is that they don't really believe what they're saying. It's just a conditioning. And when you bring up the fact that there is, there is an alternative to solving our resource problem besides depopulating, or that there's no such thing as, well, the fact that we can actually willfully and consciously change nature for the good, that we can actually do that, we can engineer the biosphere, and that we can, we've done these things where we've improved the conditions for life, and that once you actually, bring up some of these paradoxes where, for instance, the desert areas weren't always deserts, and that there's no such thing as a perfect, like, non-changing equilibrium state of nature, that a lot of these people are just completely breaking, and they're breaking down and, basically confessing that they don't really believe that we have to depopulate. And so it's just, it's true what Lynn's saying about that we're splitting the environmentalists between the genocidalists, what John was talking about, and the people that have just been totally conditioned to tote this line.
There's a real hypocrisy here, because the people who talk about the world is overpopulated, we need to cut back, they never seem to think about cutting back on themselves. Mm-hmm. So, somebody else has to cut back. And so, mm-hmm. I say, if you really believe this, start at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Well, we have another proposal. Once we bankrupt Inner Alpha and break ground in the Nuwapa, then all these overpopulated people in Seattle can move out to the dusty, barren hills of Idaho and get to work.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll put some Wall Street bankers out there, too. Let them do something honest for a change. Maybe, or send them all to Jackson Hole and then turn it into a big reservoir.
The Gark Indians? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, we'll just note, speaking of all of these rotten networks that are saying we're saving the environment, there's next week in New York City, the United Nations is having representatives from 190 nations. The General Assembly is having a three-day meeting. Obama's going to address them on Wednesday on what these networks, the Inter Alpha funders, created, called the Millennium Development Goals. They created it in year 2000, and supposedly all of this is to reduce poverty and hunger by 2015. But of course, the background is they're doing it by means of more free trade, less infrastructure that ruins the environment. But
in a sense, it's true. If you have a population of 6.7 billion. And say half of them are living below the poverty level, or three quarters of them living below the poverty level, and you drop the population to 2 billion, there are a lot fewer people who are living in poverty. If you kill them all off, they're not poor anymore. They're just dead, right?
Right. And in other words, this pretense is getting pretty tired.
It
I don't
is.
Think anyone's going for this. I didn't mean to imply there's any credibility.
No, I know, but it's, there's... There's a problem with statistics.
Well, let me ask that any of you, but especially Lewis and Francesca, too, the you're describing this, really, the buzz principle, the responsiveness, and even people giving up what they had to give lip service to for 20, 30, 40 years. It's such a relief, would you, even in the last year since... Remember the town hall phenomenon, which blew up against Congress coming back with all this crap a year ago, August. You're seeing a shifting dynamic really all the time, right, Lewis? Or how would you describe it, rather?
I don't really know.
Okay.
Well, what Lynn was saying about the evolution of this mass strike process is very much, I think it's very clear in the sense of how people are responding to the question of what the solution is, what are we going to do for the post-Obama world, and that they're not coming up to the table to talk about how much they hate Obama, but they want to come up and talk about you know, how we're going to actually solve this mess, that, you know, get out of this mess that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
They actually do want the real ideas, and, you know, they're fully capable of understanding why nothing less of NAWAPA is essential for getting out of this economic crisis, that they're ready to think big, and that they're ready to get out of this little thinking, this kind of, you know, idea of, oh, it's the big government, or any of these things that they were saying, or socialism, or any of these things that they were saying before.
Oh, that's right. Uh-huh.
They're dropping immediately once you take them through just one example, or his, you know, historical example of what the real Promethean, you know, quality of man is. Of, you know, you give them, they're actually very open to these types of ideas.
Yeah, LaRouche is on it for sure. This is the Shelley principle at work,
mm-hmm.
and it's just very, very clear. You know, people are losing everything, and including up here in the so-called affluent Northwest, the amount of fire departments and you getting shut down and budget cuts and things of that nature. People are definitely, you know, getting more and more and more desperate. They'll have the tendency for the scapegoating, but if we're there to actually introduce those profound conceptions, their mind is open. And so, you know, we really, you know, across the nation, really, really got to push this and fight like hell.
Well, all President Mustache has is to keep telling us the recovery is coming, and nobody believes that.
I know.
Right.
Yeah, there people are coming up saying, why is he still in there? It's not, you know, when are we going to get him out? But it's like, how come it hasn't happened yet? You know, what do I have to do? People that voted for Obama, you know, we have these huge semi-trucks pulling over because we do a lot of these towns where we do the pullover to impeach Obama, and they're just like, you know, they're climbing out of their trucks to do it on the job. It's just funny.
Let me ask more. The one thing, John, in your article that you mentioned it earlier in our discussion, that this gang, you can see, they looted, right? The elite, and then you get the superstar element of this apparatus, the Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, and they're part of the deployment to cause more harm and damage.
Yeah, there's
But right now we're in a situation where they think they can ride it. Some of them in the background think they can ride it on the way down. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, they think they're gonna wind up. You have this fantasy of winding up on top of whatever pile
of rubble
is left. You know,
okay.
The king of the hill, right?
Yeah.
All right, and you know, so they think they're gonna make it, but how do you? We're going into a dark age. We're going into chaos. And everything breaks down, and we can see it now. The fabric of society itself is breaking apart. So how are they going to protect themselves in this environment? I mean, and some of them are beginning to figure out, wait a minute, we better not go down this road. But, you know, the sad thing is, I mean, from their standpoint, the problem they have is that the only policy which is going to reverse this is ours. And so, you know, they have a lot of adjustments to make if they want to save themselves. But, you know, you see this thing, and, you know, you have, for example, Wall Street. One of my favorite examples is the traders of Wall Street. You know, these people who think that they're the masters of the universe and that, you know, the whole economy runs on our manipulation of money. And if we didn't do this, there would be no economy at all. So, therefore, you have to give us whatever we want. Well, these people are idiots. And they're being played as puppets by the Anglo-Venetian puppet masters, because what they're really doing with their Wall Street trading empires and the derivatives and all of these things is they're absolutely destroying their own country. They're committing suicide, and they're too damn stupid to even know it. And so they're puppets. They think they run the world, and they're nothing but puppets. You know, so who cares what these people have to say? We don't need them. We don't need Wall Street. We don't need the City of London.
That's true.
We don't need any of these clowns. It's time to throw the whole mess of them out and go back to the policy of physical economy and NAWAPA and rebuilding infrastructure and reasserting national sovereignty. And that's the only way out. Otherwise, we're headed into a deep, dark pit.
Right. On the fantasy point you mentioned, you know, that people who are you know, the black-hearted ones who are running, who think they're running everything and can do so forever, or they're the ones who also said, okay, let Enron take a nosedive. You know, yeah. It's not that they're, and there are other banks or other, they can get rid of that and ride it down to 2 billion people as chattel or something. But it's great. It's obviously.
If you have, think about the size of the financial superstructure, the financial system, to run the world at the peak of the bubble. And the size of the financial system that's required to run a world of 2 billion people. Right? And this is run by the Anglo-Venetian Empire. How many of these Wall Street white guys are going to be around? How are they going to make the cut? You know, these guys think they're running the world, but they're about to have their head. They have, most of them have had their head handed to them, and the rest of them, it's coming. And they're all going to be wiped out. You know, so they think they're running the show, but you can switch very quickly. You know, today's champion is tomorrow's lunch. You know, and these guys are about to be eaten for lunch.
I see you're having a good time at the prospect of the breakout in which we are now.
Well, you know, they've asked for it for so long, and it's only fair that we let them have it.
Okay. Well, if we go from that to physical reality again of the economy and so forth, I can't help but ask in the final few minutes, and you're all welcome to throw anything in here too, but Francesca, you, in talking to some of these professors, engineers, or other, I mean, some of the veteran geoscience people, you know, who have backgrounds and different things, did they raise, I'd be interested in anything as far as the discussion they raise about, once they get beyond, holy cow, this is the biggest thing I've seen since I was young, you know, do they raise any special physical constraints about tunneling in Idaho, about the height of things, about how wide, about hydraulic problems when your tunnel's too big or small? Or is there anything you want to bring out, or is that premature to ask then?
Well, there are definitely technical problems that come up when they realize that we're talking about pumping water from a level of 3,000 feet up to 5,000 feet.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty mind-boggling for these scientists and engineers. Although they don't think it's impossible, they know that it's a big task, and they do have questions. A lot of times, you know, I can't answer them, but that's why we're talking with them, is because, you know, they're actually these types of experts are the ones that are actually, that do have the know-how of figuring out how to solve these problems. And a lot of it is the question of that, you know, that's what man does. We solve these problems. When we actually have a clear mission of what we're doing, we can solve these problems, including, you know, some of the, you know, particular aspects of the project, which, you know, I don't have to go into, but you know, it's actually exciting to see that there are people that do get excited about these kinds of challenges.
Right, and one thing I know that this is expressed across the board in some of the back rooms of the institutions of the United States, three or four of them had the mandate for about 100 years to be engaged in this, the Bureau of Reclamation and the Interior Department, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Department of Agriculture in its soil and water section and its upper watershed projects, and then the Power Commission people. But many of them are saying exactly what you're saying, Francesca. We could do this, but you just can't think that, you know what I mean? but we could do this, of course, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always.
And, of course, many of them have been under gag orders. You get that in the engineering firms, too, but, I mean, these are terrible gag orders.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the force of tragedy. That's that brainwashing question that Francesca was talking about with the professors.
Right.
In a sense.
So, of course, you're creating the potential of the breakout on individual by individual. Now, we have one email here John can see it. In fact, it's from Mark down in Chesapeake, Virginia, and he took off from what something you said, Francesca. Although he says, so if the he's concerned that the banks and other receivers of all these trillions of bailout money are going to refuse to return their portion.
Well, I'd like
John,
to answer that.
John, I think it's his meat. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what? We take them over. You know, the beauty of having national sovereignty is that these guys can't refuse you. You can do it. You just, okay, we're closing your bank. You know? This is not a voluntary operation. We're not asking your permission, Mr. Empire. We just did it. We're notifying you that we now own you. We don't care what you think about it. You don't have anything to say about it. So, you know, that's the whole issue with national sovereignty. And you say, and you're going to protect, you know, under the Constitution, you act to protect the population of the United States. And these people don't have any power when you exert that constitutional authority. They do what you tell them or they're replaced.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Well, let me ask you in the final few minutes, again, you can, as I say, you can throw something in here, but in Seattle itself, are you, do you want to say something about the differentiated response of people? I mean, are you making a point since it's September and campuses have come back on? Or you may be targeting other situations. What's the response right there where you're headquartered for the Northwest in organizing for this?
You mean in terms of the campus work?
Well, I mean, do you have, in terms of NWAPA and Glass-Steagall?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Whether it's on campus or some of the, over the last couple years, you've taken Glass-Steagall and the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act to many county or local governments, in fact. I was just wondering if you want to describe any patterns of response there.
Well, like Lewis was saying earlier, the importance of giving people getting their imagination wrapped around what the future could be, and giving them that idea of the kind of prospects that we have right before us if we actually follow through with the Glass-Steagall and, you know, obviously the removal, you know, we got to get Obama out, that this, it's very clear to people if you go from the top down, you know, of the fact that there is an alternative to this crisis that they're facing, and that we, you know, as long as we stick to the truth of, you know, what we're doing. And I mean, I would just say that the potential is much greater than it's ever been right now,
including in Seattle.
Yeah.
And you were describing that, Lewis, about the actual, also the backdrop. It includes people's daily lives and the whole scope of this. Do you want to say more about, I mean, the impact of the breakdown?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I don't know if I necessarily have to say so much more, but you know, we definitely are covering it nationally. And up here, you know, there's one example I can think of where in Edmonds they don't have a fire department anymore, and they had just created it. And somebody at a city council meeting was talking about a fire that they, you know, had to get the county to respond to. And the police's attitude was just section the whole place off, you know, it was a car fire, and just let the thing burn out because they're not going to get there in time, you know, this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, there's different individual stories. The city of Tukwila up here is totally bankrupt. They're trying to fill a $9 million hole by cutting everything they possibly can. And so it definitely is having an impact. But it's important. The people that we meet don't have any sense really of optimism except for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true across the board. And so we have to maintain, you know, almost like generals in a sense. We're marshaling people. We're leading them, you know, into that future that is very, very much possible and that we're not going to take any objections to. So.
Right. Well, we're in the last few seconds. We have 1 minute. I do want to reiterate that it's Friday. That's September 24th, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the LaRouche International Webcast on the whole situation. I think it has the title The New Economy. You can see that on www.larouchepac.com. And also, I was looking, in the last month, he has five major papers. Just in the last 24 hours, one is posted, speaking of relevant history, on MacArthur and Eisenhower. He calls it was no conspiracy, MacArthur and Eisenhower. Look for that right away. Besides one since our last show that was posted around September 12th on how Adam Smith fooled you. John has just been referring to this. Sucker. You suckers most of the time, but not all the time. So, and with that, we will be here September 25 next Saturday, and I'm very glad for everyone to be able to be here. John Hofel with me, Francesca Naimi, and Lewis Wilden, and I thank you all. Talk to you soon. This is Marcia Mary Baker, September 18th.